North-South Connection Podcast Network. Here we are again for the year that was. My goodness, it feels like just yesterday I started this series, but we are actually at our 15th episode, which I think is definitely a good sign that I'm going to finish the whole thing. And for our 15th episode, we are looking today at the 21st best pay-per-view year of all time. And I wanted this time, if you're not on Facebook, and if you are on Facebook, please check out our group, The Place to Be. It's kind of loosely affiliated with Place to Be Nation and the North-South Connection Podcast Network, but we're trying to get everything a bit more interactive for everyone. So I'm going to try something a bit different today. I'm going to talk about my thoughts on the show, but I wanted to share some of yours as well. And in the future, if this works out, please keep sharing them there. And if you have any questions or anything you want me to address from the particular years, let me know. And let me know if this concept works as a whole also. I'm at Aaron D. George on Twitter, or you can find me in the group The Place to Be on Facebook. So 2012, it's a year I remember really fondly. This was around the time where my friends and I were really starting to use these monthly pay-per-views as like the basis of our social relationship. Every month we'd go to a bar, we'd go to my house, and we had planned to go to WrestleMania this year, WrestleMania 28 in April, but I became a father in March of this year, which was a bit more rewarding, in fairness. And that's with a good WrestleMania. Like, it's not like I didn't go to WrestleMania 32. I missed WrestleMania 28, which is pretty good. And listen, and don't come at me with you prefer your kids to wrestling, you know? Look, I know there's some psychos out there who expect like undying allegiance to the WWE, but you're not gonna find that here, all right? Instead, I've tried to foster my children's interest and create more fans. See? I'm actually building new fans, all right? And if you aren't actually fucking and building new humans to be fans of Vince and the company, well, then you're not a real fan. And I thought one of the more fun comments I got from this year was Dennis Nunez, who's like, we're talking about 2012. He said, it's a year that people were meh on at the time, but are now weirdly nostalgic for in 2020. And I think there's probably a lot of reasons for that. I think everything felt fresh in 2012 for the most part. And I think it's largely due to the Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. But I think this was kind of, it was around 2012 where the shows went to 3 hours. So we're still in somewhat of a 2 hour Raw era. I don't know, like compared to today, everything, and even just watching them, like when I had to watch 2019 versus when I had to watch 2012, 2019 was a chore. 2012 was fine. You know, there's shows that are longer than others, but it's really only WrestleMania. Some through lines for the year. I think this is a really clear year that shows that the glass ceiling is real. Even if you're the world champion, you are not the main guy in the company. And that doesn't just go for one person. And I think there's also, the whole year is messed up a bit because they want to do the Rock Cena rematch. I think that becomes important as we progress through the year. And I think also Cena's worst year is probably better than our best year ever as just fans and human beings. And I think Ryan Harry brought up a really nice through line too. It's the rise of Daniel Bryan. He's like the baseball team you expected to go 80 and 81, 91, 71, and then make the playoffs. So let's go through our categories. If you're new to this, I watched every WWE pay-per-view over a three-year period. I rank them in 12 categories, and we do an aggregate score. This one ended up 21st out of 35, so we're working towards the median of 18. And the first category we're looking at is matches. And I have it 11th out of 35, with 14 four-star matches. That's really good. That's rare. There's years with more, but it's a pretty strong year for four-star-plus matches. The average match rating is 3.01, so the average is at least good, which is more than you can say for a good majority of these. So, yeah, like 11 out of 35 have an average match rating that's at least good. So it's in the top third for matches, which is why I finished 11th. 54% of the matches are good or great, and there's only 13 bad matches out of 88 matches. Imagine a year with only 88 matches. When I do 2019, 2018, there's like 150 matches. Those years are interminable. But it makes sense that the matches are good because almost all the people in prominent positions throughout the year are good in-ring guys. You go Punk and Bryan, two of the best in-ring guys they've ever had. And I mean, Punk is kind of a weird, kind of sloppy good in-ring guy, but his matches always had drama. And Punk is arguably the best technical wrestler they've ever had. Sheamus, too, is really under the radar good. Ziggler always delivers. Del Rio's solid. John Cena's kind of placed with some bad workers for most of the year, but he still comes out and produces an all-timer. And Chris Jericho has a little in-ring renaissance in 2012. What's good about the year match-wise is it really plays to the athletic strengths of the guys they have on the roster, which is something they don't always do. Worst match of the year, John Cena versus Kane. Ambulance match from Elimination Chamber. And I feel like this match is just such a great representation of their entire feud. It's 22 minutes. It's infinitely worse than either Elimination Chamber, and yet it's the main event of the show, which is the story of the year. John Cena in the worst year of his life, main events every single show. No matter how bad the match is, no matter how stupid the storyline is, he's there. And Kane and Cena never really had great chemistry to begin with. And then you put Zack Ryder in as like a damsel in distress. That doesn't help, all right? You don't want Zack Ryder as like the Rapunzel, all right? It doesn't add anything to the match. And this was also during the era of Cena needs to embrace the hate to beat the Rock era. And I'll never forget him. I think it was a Raw. Maybe it was on... It might have been the promo before this match in Elimination Chamber. I don't even remember at this point. But he just snarls into the camera. Like the camera kind of pans like real close up in his face. And he's like... And you can't see my face, but it's like an ugly bulldog because I'm ugly. But then I'm crunching my face into a bulldog-esque... Not a British bulldog. He's a brilliant, sexual, shiny man. But my face is more of a dog bulldog, not a David Boy Smith bulldog. Because I would never be able to achieve Diana Hart Smith. Not that I... Maybe I'd want to. I'm not throwing her to the curb. She's beautiful, right? But I'm not a shiny... roided up Davy Boy Smith with tiny testicles. That's not me. Anyway, he crunches his face. And I still watched Raw in this era, which tells you something about the year. But it was so mugged and over the top and ugh, like, I can't believe this guy's an actor now, you know? Anyway, the ambulance match feels like the most overindulgent of Cena's tendencies. Added to the baseline of Kane, you put an ambulance in, it's just like a shit sandwich of epic proportions. Let's do the top five matches before we do Mondays on the North-South Connection Podcast Network. You get this show, The Year That Was, and alternatively, you get Montreal to Memphis, me and my buddy Reg, talking all kinds of topics. We do deep dives. It's a lot of fun. We're old friends. If you want to like dive into Randy Savage's career or Brock Lesnar's, or sometimes we'll be like, let's rebook WrestleMania 4, check it out. Montreal to Memphis, North-South Connection Podcast Network. Top five matches. Honorable mentions. I have a couple. I'd like to mention the Punk Jericho feud. It's really good. It's very strong. And that didn't make my top five, but might be shocking to some, is the once in a lifetime between The Rock and John Cena. Don't get me wrong. I love the match. It's a really good WrestleMania main event. I don't know if it'd rank. It is probably top 10. I'm just saying that off the top of my head. I have it at 4.25 stars. I just have five matches that I think are better. Number five, Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan, 2 out of 3 falls, Extreme Rules, 4.25 stars. The fact that this is fifth speaks to the super high quality of the matches in 2012. These guys go out and kill each other and give us the match that we should have or could have gotten at WrestleMania. And what I love, too, is with the 2 out of 3 falls, they actually work some strategy in with Bryan, like getting DQ'd for injuring Sheamus' shoulder, slaps him in the US locks, makes him pass out. It's an all-time classic, and it's a great argument to use if anybody tells you that Sheamus can't go. Sheamus doesn't get a lot of credit as an in-ring guy, but I think if you look at his catalog, there's very few weak things in there. Number four, CM Punk versus Daniel Bryan, Over the Limit, 4.5 stars. This is another classic. It may have won any other year. I think it's crazy. I think it had room to be better. Maybe it's because it wasn't the main event and they didn't give it as much time, but they give us a really incredible encounter. It's worthy of the main event in any show, except for this show, which is main evented by John Cena losing to John Laurinaitis. So obviously that was more important. A couple people agree. Rory McNamara, Punk versus Bryan at Over the Limit, chef kiss gif. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I know it's not as effective in audio format, but in fairness, he didn't share the gif either. He wrote chef kiss gif under not even quotations, asterisks, right? So I feel like we both have done the minimal effort to give this image to you guys. So if anybody wants to share it somewhere, you go ahead. Matt Petticourt, I was at Over the Limit 2012. Great show. Punk and Brian was one of the best matches I've ever seen live. I think if I saw it live too, I'd be in that camp also. But I mean, I'm from Montreal. You know, we got the Survivor Series, 97, No Way Out, 03, and that fucking Breaking Point pay-per-view. Anyway, Jeffrey Thomas, huge fan of the WWE title match at Over the Limit, but it also exposes how the brass ring concept works in wrestling promotions. Put a five-star clinic on a secondary show and force-feed dedicated fans garbage at the annual Super Show. Yeah, I mean, I think if we're talking, say, SummerSlam, I think I'd probably agree with you more, Jeffrey. I think WrestleMania this year is actually really good. Really good. But you're right. And I will say this. Never mind put on a five-star clinic at a secondary show and have the Super Show be something. Put on a five-star clinic at a show where you're the world champion and you still can't get into the main event of the show because John Cena is fighting an authority figure. So, yeah, I'm with you. It does really show how the brass ring concept works. Number three, best match of the year. My God, how is this number three? Brock Lesnar versus John Cena, Extreme Rules, 4 3/4 stars. Holy shit, this was incredible. And watching this live was unlike any other wrestling match experience in my life. So I went in thinking like, you know, it'll probably be pretty good. It'll be an athletic spectacle. And then I started legit worrying for John Cena's safety. Those opening Lesnar elbows are the exact elbows I wish I could have thrown on the French guys I used to play hockey against. He busts Cena's head open, legit, proceeds to demolish him for the entire match. This was unlike anything we'd ever seen on pay-per-view before. Short of Mankind getting, I would say it's similar feelings to Mankind being thrown off the cage. Mankind being thrown off the cage is like, oh my God, he's dead. Whereas this is like, oh my God, he's hurting him for real. It looked and felt like a real fight. Lesnar felt reckless. So reckless that he almost killed himself jumping out of the ring. Only this time they didn't have a snooker relative to blame. It was all Brock, baby. And I have no idea why Cena had to win this. Yes, I know he cheated with the chain. Well, he didn't cheat. It's in the rules. Chain in his hand and such. But it just felt like the wrong story based on the wrong finish, based on the stories they were telling. First, Lesnar felt like more of a human after, which hurt him. And second, if Cena's having the worst year of his life, maybe he doesn't need to beat the legit toughest guy they've ever had in the promotion. And look, I don't know if Lesnar could take Haku or not. I don't know if that could happen. But I do believe that Lesnar would try Haku. And that speaks volumes. I'm going to go back to Rory McNamara saying, Brock holding Cena's brain in his hand after the first 30 seconds is quite the open. And I remember watching this. This one I watched at home and with my pregnant. I had a little, like a month-year-old at this point. But yeah, we were all like shocked watching it. Number two, The Undertaker versus Triple H. Hell in a Cell, WrestleMania. I have 5 stars. Whoa! Triple H match, making my list. And hitting 5 stars? Like, I love the story here, okay? And I know this kind of goes contrary to a lot of things I say about Triple H, but for some reason I liked it here. I don't know why. I love that it carried over the story from the year before. I find that, like, the year before, Triple H was hitting Undertaker and saying, stay down! Stay down! Stay down! And like he'd hit him with a chair, stay down, stay down. But the whole match the year before was built around the idea that Triple H had to win. He's like, I have to win. I have to beat your streak. But then he never tried to win the match. Now, I liked the match the year before. I didn't used to like it. Then on this rewatch when I did, you know, 2011 hasn't come yet, so it's coming. I liked it, but it didn't make sense in the context of the match that he was yelling for him to get up or to stay down when he could have just pinned him. So if you need to win, if that's the story, you need to win, you don't stand around in your underwear yelling for a guy to stay down. You pin him after bashing him in the chair with a chair for like the 30th time. Back to this match. I think the sweet chin music into the pedigree is really an incredible near fall. I thought it was over there. And I think the reason, or one of the reasons why this match works really well, besides both guys going out and busting ass, and I don't want to take anything away from, I know I shit on Triple H all the time, but I thought he was really good in this match. And I think The Undertaker is great in it too. But I think there's some interesting things going on. Number one, from a fan's perspective, you're not only cheering Taker over the heel Triple H, but you're also thinking that, like, the whole match, you're like, is fucking Triple H going to put himself over The Undertaker at WrestleMania? Is he going to end the streak? And it's interesting because it gives you two different emotional reactions to the match. You have the superficial one and then the one kind of under where you're like, fuck, again? He's got to ruin this again? So I think the moment where Undertaker steps on the sledgehammer So Triple H kind of crawling to the ground, Undertaker steps on the sledgehammer, and the camera pans up. Triple H grabbing the sledgehammer, Undertaker puts his foot on it, and the camera pans up to Undertaker smiling. And I think, number one, that's an incredible camera shot that doesn't get talked about enough. But then he destroys Triple H, and it's just such a great catharsis. This year's, I should have put that as a theme too, the catharsis of Triple H getting hurt. Look, great match. It was the end of an era, okay? And look, thank heavens, both of these guys never came back and embarrassed themselves on a throwaway Blood Money event, all right? Let's just thank our lucky stars that never happened. Scott Criscolo tends to agree with me. He says, the two of my favorite matches, Punk and Bryan and Over the Limit and Triple H Taker at 28. And I agree, Scott. Very good match at 28. I'm with you on Triple H here. I wish you would come a little more over to my side on the rest of it. And look, that's not even the best match of the year. And I this might seem like a crazy match to put number one, but I just think it was so different and interesting. The number one match, and it's kind of forgotten now, but it's The Shield versus Ryback, Kane, and Bryan from TLC. I have it at 5 stars. I think it's crazy that this match has both Ryback and Kane in it, but here we are. The Shield was so different and unique. The way they moved and tagged out, they felt like a heavyweight version of the best Mexican trios teams. And the whole thing was just a crazy high adrenaline rush from bell to bell. And it really, I think this match, more than anything, really made stars out of Ambrose, Reigns, but most of all, Rollins. Everyone looked good, including Feed Me More and Kane. And that's incredible. Next category, characters. I have it 20th out of 35. And it's the year of the Vice President of Talent Relations, right? Oh, my name is John. Oh, I'm having a stroke. Oh, my God. Oh, man. Because he has sex with the Bella's mom, right? Like, they've probably been in a hotel filming this show and heard like, I'm sorry. He probably heard that. They've probably heard that on more than one occasion. And I think if Laurinaitis never stepped inside the ring, this character would be a win. The Rock comes back as a character, always a plus. When he demeaned Gene Okerlund for sporting John Cena gear, he felt like he was saying something we're all thinking. I'd like to mention Ryback. Ryback comes in and gets super over. Now, at first, they're chanting Goldberg at him, all right? But by the end of the year, he's arguably the most overfaced in the company. Yes, it's because they turned Punk heel. But I think his character works because it's simple. Sure, the catchphrase, Feed Me More, makes no fucking sense. It's a mouthful to say. Sure, screaming wake up as part of your entrance seems to suggest you're in like an Ahmed Johnson-like slumber before stepping out of the curtain. And look, I know that when some of you hear meat hook, you're going to think about curved sex, but I'm not one of those people, okay? I'm not fucked up in the mind like that. I like my sex with a straight penis, and I don't mean heterosexual. I mean like a hard, erect penis, not a penis that curves and wiggles like a silly straw, okay? That's not my version of a meat hook. We also get a Funkasaurus, which I think at the time, I probably YouTubed a billion times. I got such a kick out of it because they built him up as a monster. And then he came out and, the Funkasaurus! Only in America, right? Now, I say this as a Canadian, but it could be anywhere in the Western world. But only in America could you go from being the guy, being the only living, breathing, rumping, stumping Funkasaurus in captivity to a political analyst. And also, why was no one upset that this creature was in captivity? We're all up in arms about, oh, the dolphins, and oh no, don't kill the rhinos. Like, we don't want rhinos. Rhinos would destroy us. Like, if rhinos were in cities, we would not be happy. We don't want to see their shits. We don't want to see them mate, all right? We like to put up this pretension that we care about animals, right? But we get a Funkasaurus in a cage backstage because he's in captivity, and no one says a word. We're happy with the cheerleaders dancing for him. Meanwhile, he's probably shitting in some sort of trough, and I hope it's a different trough than the one he feeds out of. Also, Santino Marella is the best comedic character of all time. He's such a great character that everyone buys in and gets behind him when he almost wins the title at the Elimination Chamber. So why does this rank so low? Well, because most of the characters we just talked about, except for me, are inconsequential. Punk is decent, but he's kind of stuck in a shitty soap opera storyline, as opposed to like the reality-based stuff from the year before that he kind of excelled in. So let's go through just a couple more characters, because everybody, there's no characters. Who is Drew McIntyre's here. Who is he? No, he's no one, right? What about Justin Gabriel? Nobody. Cesaro's nobody. They're just people on a show, right? As opposed to characters on a show that you're supposed to care about. Dolph Ziggler's just a show-off. And look, monikers, I like Dolph Ziggler's year. But monikers stop being effective when they're the things that someone else would call you as an insult. It's like you wouldn't call yourself the asshole unless you're Ken Kennedy, and who wants to take wisdom from that guy? Imagine you're called the shithead Jack Swagger or the tardy Camacho. No one would call them. John Cena is in the main event of almost every single show. And this, I mean, John Cena's character is what it is, but I think the storyline writing of John Cena's character is the problem here. So he wins a feud with Kane. He beats Lesnar in Lesnar's first match back, then cuts a promo about leaving for a while showing up the next night smiling. And despite losing the first match to John, he ultimately wins the feud by defeating Big Show, wins the Money in the Bank, loses it, but just gets another title shot anyway, draws with the champion out of the champions. He gets cheated out of the belt a few times, but it doesn't matter because he always gets another title shot. And this is the worst year of his life? Constant title shots and constant main events? What kind of charmed life does John Cena lead that he needs to be on top of the promotion, making millions of dollars and getting countless title shots, and this makes it the worst year of his life? Why? Because he lost one match to The Rock? It's his own fault he lost that match. This is a clear case of the narrative of the storyline, what they're trying to push. It's this. Not matching the actual happenings. So it's like there's a great saying in writing for drama, for TV, for plays. It's don't tell me, show me. And what they did all year was they told us he was having the worst year of his life, but they showed us he was constantly successful. And look, I'd be remiss if in characters I didn't mention super cuck Zack Ryder. And no, I didn't get that saying from the Funkasaurus, all right? I think it fits Zack Ryder. Look, he comes into the year as possibly the hottest guy on the undercard. Remember when they had hot characters on the undercard? It wasn't in this era, but he did it on his own. And what do? They put him in a wheelchair. They have John Cena steal his girlfriend. They have Kane murder him. And finally, they literally have him get kicked in the nuts to lose a match that ruins everything for his team. Take that, Zach, you piece of shit. That'll teach you to get over. WrestleMania 28. We had JT and I, No Holds Barred, which is every other Saturday, or almost every Saturday the North-South Connection podcast network. No Holds Barred dropping, I think, two or three Saturdays a month. And while I'm at it, on Tuesdays at the North-South Connection podcast network, we got a couple of really cool alternating shows. First of all, TNA Never Dies with Jenny, JT, and I. We're doing TNA from the beginning. It's fucking torture, but not for you to listener, hopefully, but for me, the watcher. It's torture. And that alternates with the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast, Jacob Williams, bringing in guests every week to talk about an era that no one really talks about, starting in 2002. It's a fun show. They break down Raw, they break down SmackDown, they break down pay-per-views. It's a lot of fun. Thursdays to, while we're at it, JT and Chad, Wrestling Warzone. They're still in 1996, but 96 is a fun year, and those are two fun guys. They have a lot of great insights, so check them out. And that alternates with ECW Three-Way Dance on Thursdays. John D'Amato, JT, and Jennifer Smith going through ECW. And if Jennifer Smith hates Shane Douglas as much as she hates Jeff Jarrett, it is definitely worth a listen. WrestleMania, 10th out of 35. I think this is a great WrestleMania, but it's hurt by the opening match. And yes, I've heard all the explanations why it was beneficial to Bryan, but it wasn't beneficial to this show. And I remember watching it live. It took me a full two matches to kind of get back into the show because I was just disappointed that, not that he lost. I don't care that he lost, but that's it. That's the match they gave us. See, it felt like they made a decision to make the show worse instead of better. And if they do the match they had at Extreme Rules, this show would be in contention for the best WrestleMania of all time. And don't tell me there's any way they planned to get Bryan hot after this. No way. If you try to convince me that this is a grand plan to get Bryan over, I'm going to go to your Facebook page and I'm going to argue with you all day. All right. Kane and Orton, fine. I'm surprised Kane won. Big Show, Cody, same. I wasn't surprised Big Show won with the story they were telling. Women's tag match with Maria Menounos all decked out in the Greek flag. Fuck, man. Show your patriotism somewhere else. That was fine, too. I love the aforementioned Hell in a Cell. 12-man tag was inoffensive, except for the stupid kick in the nuts. And I also probably believe, because there's no time. There's like 12 guys. I think they get 4 minutes, right? So they probably told them backstage, you guys can go in the ring and do one thing. You get to do one thing each. And I'm sure Dave Otunga like still said flex. Punk Jericho is awesome. It's a bit hurt, I think, by the fact that the title can't change hands on a DQ. Stipulation that never helps. But the finish, I love the finish where Punk has him in the Anaconda Vice. And Jericho's trying to kick him, but Punk has to shift his body to get out of it. Cena and Rock 2, okay, in the main event, delivered. Just like Carl the Milkman Malone, all right? It felt epic. It was epic. It told a great story of Cena's arrogance, and the right guy went over. They probably should have left it there, but hey, that's not this match's fault. But I noticed, too, in our group, we had a lot of love for this show online. James Grunberg, the main event of 28 was awesome. I agree. And Justin Pratt, WrestleMania 28 live, he was at WrestleMania 28 Live, and the groundswell and disappointment for Bryan was crazy. I've been a fan of his since the Ring of Honor days and had no gauge on what the overall appeal was on him because he was a quote-unquote indie guy. The amount of people doing the yes chant in the parking lot was insane. And it digressed into a really long conversation about WrestleMania 28 that I'll let you go and see on the Place to Be on Facebook. But it was a lot of fun. And while I'm telling you to go other places, I want you to check out North-South Connection podcast on Fridays. On Fridays, sometimes you get rank and file. Jordan Duncan, Eric Engels, and I. We're just doing lists, and it's all kinds of fun stuff. We do once a month. Our last one was the Parks and Recs. We did Parks and Recreations, the best characters. We did a tournament of that. It's not lists, it's tournaments. We basically do a tournament and then book the tournament almost. And you can disagree with us or whatever. That alternates with Shrink Wrap, the Psychology of Superheroes, Tim Capel, Jennifer Smith, and Sean Kidd. Breaking down the psychological aspect of comic books, which is a completely new and different take and a lot of fun. And alternating every two Fridays is myself, JT, and Josh Richer. The gang gets an Always Sunny podcast. We're going through It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is one of my favorite shows. I think it's a really fun show. It's different, and I really enjoy it. Down on Sunday, Second Print Comics, you get Mark Claire and Remzo Martinez. They are their comic show is great. Give it a listen because it goes like it's cool. We have the psychology driven one, but this is just kind of like a deep dive into what made these classic stories work, and their own personal feelings based on their experience looking at them. Every episode I've listened to so far I've really liked. I haven't had a chance to listen to all of them yet, but they're all downloaded. They're all on the list. So check it out. Second Print Comics on Sundays. We are lucky to have Mr. Claire and Remzo involved. That's all the plugs. World title storyline. I had it 10th out of 35. So in many ways, it's great. Punk and Jericho is a fun feud. I think it would have better served if they'd held off the alcoholic stuff till after the first match. That way they could have used it to build and actually justify the second match. It's a bit of a pet peeve of mine when guys get rematches just because we have to do three pay-per-views. Punk and Bryan is equally great. But again, it gets bogged down. By adding AJ Lee and Kane. And of course, this is probably great for Punk because he met his wife, but maybe not great for us as the viewing audience. And then they turn Punk heel, which in theory is fine. But here's the problem. And this is the problem with the year, which is why it doesn't finish higher. It's done solely to get to Rock and Cena rematch the following year at WrestleMania. And it hurts the rest of the year. See, there's no need for the title match between Rock and Cena at WrestleMania 29 to be for the title. There's enough emotion to drive it on its own, especially if Cena's having the worst year of his life. But Vince is going to be Vince. And just like in 2017, when Goldberg and Lesnar didn't need the title, this one didn't need it either, but they both got it. Now, in 2017, there's not really any casualties. I guess you could argue that Jericho and Owens could have had a Universal title match and might have meant more. But in 2012, there was a big casualty. Ryback. See, Ryback, as much as I didn't love him, was over. And his march should have been the traditional march. Should have won the Royal Rumble and fought Punk at Mania, maybe beaten Punk at Mania. I think it's not that I love the guy. I just think they needed to try with Ryback. Because you're in the era now where you're really trying to replace Cena. And, you know, Ryback's kind of checks a lot of the boxes. And so you try with him. You have him win the Rumble and win a Mania. At worst, it fails. Big deal, it fails. Just one main event. It'll probably be a good match with Punk at Mania in a main event slot. It probably wouldn't make the main event because, you know, Cena and Rock, but whatever. So at worst it fails, but at best you get a new star. Instead, they had this over guy, but no plans to have him win the belt at Mania. So they decided to just plug him in the nothing months of October and November. They put Ryback in matches that like he couldn't afford to lose, but they didn't want him to win. So the fall was filled with bullshit finishes involving future adult star Brad Maddox. I'll let you figure out what his porn name should be. And the rest of the WWE title is the whole scene is just wasted as a consequence. Now, on the World Heavyweight title side, Sheamus is actually a really good fighting champion. I like him. His push is a little unfocused because he's in multi-man matches. He's fighting Del Rio. They put him in four ways. And it's fine. But the match quality is always good. And I even like when he finally loses to Big Show. I love that like Big Show's whole point is like, you're not taking this title seriously. I'm an actual threat. I can beat you. And then he beats him clean, which is a kind of cool finish they don't always do. Mid-card storyline. Santino was U.S. champ for most of the year. Hold on. I have 33 out of 35. Because Santino is U.S. champ for most of the year and then loses the belt on the pre-show to Cesaro, who wrestles twice. Cody Rhodes is a really good Intercontinental Champion, but they seem to really want to tell the story about Big Show stepping through tables. And then they put the belt on the combo of Miz and Christian. It just doesn't light the world on fire. And it really feels like, why are there mid-card titles? Because we say so. Tag team storyline, 17th out of 35. Really, it's half a year where they actually put focus, and that's where it gets these points. If they focused on it the whole year, it would be in the top. And it's all about Team Hell No. It's all about them. Their skits are awesome. Their matches are good. If only they'd been named Team Friendship. I don't know why they put that up to a vote. I'm pretty sure Daniel Bryan in his book even says, like, it's the one thing I wish they wouldn't have put up to a fan vote. Team Hell No is stupid, all right? I think it's a stupid name for a team. They pop, and when you watch their match where they win the tag team titles at Night of Champions, they do this spot where they hug it out to power up, and the pop is huge, and I don't know why they didn't keep that spot. And I have a real problem, despite the fact they focused on it, I have a real problem. Team names that start with the name Team. Team Hell No. Team Rhodes Scholars. Team BAD. Team PCB. The hell was the other one? Team Bella. Like, does the company not know or not think that we'll know they're a team if they're just called the Rhodes Scholars? Look, it didn't need to be Team Killer Bees. We knew it was a team. Didn't need to be Team Techno Team 2000. Women's storyline, 29th out of 29. The worst. The worst year for women. Layla's the champion forever. The less said, the better. It's one match per month with about a total combined 4 minutes of storyline behind each match. It's stupid. Royal Rumble match, 26 out of 33. And I hope you like comedy. Well, there's actually some real comedy on it. I'll say Santino Foley, Ricardo Rodriguez was legit funny. And I thought maybe some of the best comedy they've done. Like with Ricardo's entrance, with the car, the shitty car. And it felt like a perfect storm of all three of their stupidity, which worked. It was at the beginning of the match, didn't really affect anything. I will say it must have sucked later for Ricardo Rodriguez because like he comes out, he has this incredible moment. The crowd is chanting his name. And he must be like, you know what? I want to go back and watch it. I want to see how it came off on TV. Then he goes back and watches it, and it's just Michael Cole making fun of how fat he is. All class, Michael Cole. Also, do we need all the announcers entering this one? All of them? Did, like, Cole, Booker, and Lawler need to go in for, like, a combined, like, 10 seconds? Was there no one else on the roster? We needed David Otunga and his stupid-ass theme song? Ho-ay-o! Ho-ay-o! When you stand... It's so... stupid. He'll never be interesting, Maggle. No matter how many pro bono cases he takes. I don't care if he fucks his way through the entire cast of Dreamgirls. He's awful. He can fuck his way up to Eddie Murphy. He's still not... All this, okay, all this match. We thought Orton was going to win, okay, because it was in St. Louis, got a huge pop. And instead, we get a really cool little mini match with Sheamus and Silent Jericho. Sheamus takes the win. Interesting winner. Cody Rhodes is a really good Iron Man. I think there's a good Rumble match in here, just buried under so much bullshit. Historical importance, JT and I had it 14th out of 35. Rock comes back. Brock comes back. It's the end of some kind of an era. We get the rise of Bryan, the longest WWE title reign of the modern era, not to mention the worst year of John Cena's life and Hunico being a thing. SummerSlam, 26 out of 33. Ah, that main event feels good. That main event feels good. Watching Hunter tap and then not only tap, but then cry his way to the back, begging for the sympathy chant. This is the stuff of miracles. If only he'd retired here or after WrestleMania 15. Either one, right? But him trying to milk the audience, saying goodbye, trying to make this emotional moment, and the crowd just shitting on him, and saying, "You tapped out." That's the sum total of Triple H's career right there. He doesn't know how to read a goddamn room. I still don't know why he gets to look stronger against Lesnar than John Cena, but I guess that's why I'm not creatively running a wrestling company to the ground. Jericho and Ziggler at this SummerSlam have a fun opener. A freshly minted heel, CM Punk, gets the best reaction of the night. I don't see why we need to add Big Show to the triple threat match with John Cena. We couldn't just have another great CM Punk-John Cena match. But then again, I guess if Cena took the pin, it might actually be the worst year of his life. Look, SummerSlam 2012, it's not a bad show, but it's just really uneventful. Miz and Mysterio's good. Sheamus Del Rio's good. There's nothing memorable. Worst show of the year. Best show. Wow, worst show of the year. Elimination Chamber. I mean, this is the example of a year not really having a terrible show. and Elimination Chamber just kind of getting it, you know, as a consequence of that. It's not that bad. It's just the ambulance match. There's a shitty Jack Swagger versus Justin Gabriel match. I don't know why Justin Gabriel's getting U.S. title shots. That's how much they care about the championship. And we got Tamina getting work in a major wrestling promotion. So there we go. The best show. Now, I had some contention over myself about this, okay? Because in my stats, this is where I had to kind of step in with some of the stats. In my stats, there was actually really close to the top, and I had WrestleMania and TLC topping the list. But fuck that. That's not the best show of the year. The best show of the year is Extreme Rules, okay? And it's going because it's one of the best shows of all time. The three top matches break 4 stars. And I didn't even really talk earlier about Jericho and Punk's street fight, which is incredible. And the only time guys should wear jeans to the match. I love that they both wore jeans or a costume as a consequence of the match. I guess when I say costume, it makes it look bad. The only bad match on Extreme Rules is Kane and Orton and their false count anywhere, but it's just not a great, it's not a great concept. Tyler Kelly, I'd like to call Extreme Rules a top 10 pay-per-view they've ever done, and had Brock versus Cena very, very high on my GWWE list. Punk Bryan from Over the Limit and Rock Cena from Mania also made it. And then he goes on to say, I've watched little else from this year and have little desire to do so, unless he asks me to change his mind. I honestly can't change your mind, Tyler. I'll do my best, but honestly, you're better off watching this than a lot of other years. I'd say more than any year we've talked about so far. Because you'll probably find some stuff that you like on it. You'll probably find like, oh my God, that Sheamus title run is actually way better than I thought. Oh, Kofi Kingston and R-Truth is not a horrible team. You know, Randy Orton, Alberto Del Rio, good matches. You know, so you'll find stuff you like, but there's nothing exciting about 2012. And Matt Souza, Extreme Rules 2012 is a top 5 show of the decade. Yeah, I can't really argue there. 3 matches that I would have 4 stars and above. When I think of the decade, what could be better than it? I mean, the NXT... Yeah, let's discount NXT. If we discount NXT, it's probably way harder. I would say Money in the Bank 2011 is better than it. That might be it. That honestly might be it. Maybe one. Yeah, maybe. Maybe that might be it. Maybe SummerSlam 2011. I think that's a really underrated show. But we'll get there. We do 2011. All right, 5 worst wrestlers, 5 best wrestlers. Then we're out of here. 5 worst wrestlers of the year. Look, I'm going to do this fast, okay? Because they're all women. 5 Tamina, 4 Eve Torres, 3 Caitlyn, 2 Beth Phoenix, and the worst wrestler of the year, Layla. In 6 matches, they're all under 2.5 stars. She carries the division and has bad matches against every single opponent. She even drags Beth Phoenix down here. I don't need to keep harping on this. But like, during this period, I would say from... The women's division is a hindrance on the promotion during this era. Because it doesn't, it just devalues everybody they have on the roster. They clearly just don't care. They don't care. They're just there. I don't even know why they're there. Like it's almost like an insult because like if you're trying to bring in a different demographic by using women, right? Then at least give them a major part of the show or some respect. Instead, they're just using them as bathroom break matches. And yeah, they're all athletic, but they're not all good wrestlers. Beth Phoenix is a really good wrestler. But of the 5 I just mentioned, she's the only one. Tamina's terrible. Eve Torres is athletic. Caitlyn is green. And Layla's awful. So I just think every year we keep having this conversation around this time. I say me alone into the microphone. But about how they're the worst of the year. Every year. They just progress. They just produce the worst matches. So I'm going to give you the guys just to give it some... Give you some balance. If we ignore the divas, 5 worst, Justin Gabriel. And so how I come to this, okay? So everybody's ranked on an average star rating for all their matches. And then they're ranked for points. So the way they get points is the matches are ranked from 1 to 88 for this year. In theory, match number 1 gets 88 points. Match number 88 gets 1 point. But then they get bonuses for being 4-star, 5-star, et cetera, et cetera. So you actually get hurt in this category if you're not on the shows that much. And I try to balance that sometimes where like if I see that like someone had a really bad year, but didn't follow in the points, I try to adjust it. But no one really had a bad year this year. So that's why you're going to see people on this show that on this list that don't really amount to anything. So number 5, Justin Gabriel does nothing. He has these incredible gifts and does nothing. Number 4, Cesaro. They have no idea what to do with him, so they just have him say different things in languages, different languages. Number 3, Brodus Clay. Can't wrestle, but boy, can he whip up a strong straw man argument. Jack Swagger's terrible, and number 4, worst wrestler of the year, Drew McIntyre. He's either in bullshit multi-man matches, or he's getting humped by the Funkasaurus. So, and if I go through this list, if I were to look at who wrestled a significant amount of matches that's near the bottom, you're looking at Miz, had a pretty bad 2012. Santino, Ryback, Christian, Kane. Everybody, like Randy Orton had bad matches, but he had good matches too, so it balanced, right? So the five best, and we're out. Five best. Number five, Dolph Ziggler. Under the radar year, despite the stupid show-off nickname. He's got a great ladder match with John Cena at TLC. TLC is a really good show. We didn't talk about it all, but it's a good show. If you're going to watch a show from this year, you can't really go wrong with TLC, to be honest. It's very good. He's got good matches with Sheamus and CM Punk. He wins the Money in the Bank. Look, everything Dolph Ziggler's in this year is good. Even the tag team with Jack Swagger where they're tag-teaming Vicky. Team tag team Vicky. All right, Chris Jericho. Awesome year with Punk and Ziggler. Number four. Number three, Sheamus. I think he has a really great year as World Heavyweight Champion. This guy looks like he can really hurt you, which is a plus for any professional wrestler. Yes, he's pale as fuck. Yes, he never knew his father, but he delivered. Number two, Daniel Bryan. All the greatness with Sheamus. All the greatness with Punk. And then add in the team with Kane. I'll be honest, I thought he was going to win Wrestler of the Year for me. But he didn't. Because the guy who won Wrestler of the Year for me, CM Punk. I think he really carried almost everything. He's a really good world champion. His matches are always good, always near the top of the card. Sometimes the best match of the night, but sometimes not. But whatever, he's always great in his title defense matches. Great character, just really wonderful all around on a lot of the shows. We didn't even talk about his match with Ziggler at Royal Rumble, which is very good. He's really good in the Elimination Chamber. These are just matches we didn't talk about because we only talk about the best. But, you know, like all of his matches are like, I think, in the top 25 matches, which is something, right? Except for maybe the triple threat with, what's his nuts? The two triple threats with both with Cena. Cena and Big Show, Cena Ryback. Yeah. But yeah, I think he deserved better than the quick heel turn for no reason. High grade stuff, super consistent. Based on this year and the previous year, probably deserve that main event slot at WrestleMania. But that's an argument for another week. Speaking of someone who would argue with me on that, Jay Hinchy. Interesting year for sure, 2012, with The Rock, John Cena feud, CM Punk becoming the longest reigning WWE champion of the modern era, the slow rise of Daniel Bryan after losing the World Heavyweight title in 18 seconds, the Shield debuts, AJ Lee was on fire that year. Raw goes 3 hours and surpasses 1,000 episodes, Brock Lesnar returns, Johnny Ace has a run of the Raw, SmackDown general manager, etc. I love the etc. there. He says he did make two shows this year. He went to the final Raw before WrestleMania 28. That must have been cool. Which they also taped a couple other things for. And then Hell in a Cell. I wonder what show was better. Jay, tell me on the Place to Be. The Place to Be site. What was a better show to be at? The Raw or the Hell in a Cell? And then Sean Thurman. I think 2012 made the last year of WWE program I truly enjoyed. I'm with you. I was obsessed with everything that Punk and Bryan did that year and absolutely loved the love triangle with AJ Lee. Oh, I'm glad you liked it. And look, as just a final kind of cap, Ryan Gray, fun high points, boring stretches, and people power! Look, I just wish they hadn't pissed away the Royal Rumble and SummerSlam. This year finished 14 points back at 20th place. That's not that many, all in all, right? And we're closing into the median. It's not a year you think of as an all-time classic, but if you rewatch it, Tyler... I think you'll find it's a year peppered with great matches and very few duds. There's some, but not too many. It's really palatable. You can do it in a short amount of time. All the shows are reasonable length, and it's the last year I can really remember enjoying watching live wrestling with only a few complaints. Maybe having kids destroyed wrestling for me, but like I said, I'm making new fucking fans. Next time on The Year That Was, we're going to be around the same time period. We're going to deal with many of the same guys, but in very many different contests. As always, thank you so much for supporting the North-South Connection Podcast Network. Thank you for supporting this show. I'm at Aaron D. George on Twitter. Please subscribe. Leave us a review. Tell me how much you hate it. Take care, guys. See you.